Up next on the Wells Tech Podcast, we talk about technology that can be used in your shut-in ministries. We chat with a couple folks from Nebraska about a new product in the Shop Wells program called SmoothWall, how to keep your kids safe while at school. And then we talk about all kinds of Google stuff. Coming up next on the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to episode 208 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, November 2nd, 2011. Joining me, as usual, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. I can't believe you just said November.
November, yes.
Flying by.
Yep, and that means that we just passed Reformation and also Halloween. And the wonders of Facebook, I saw a picture of you in a getup that was very quite interesting.
Yep, I was a Trekkie, yes, on Halloween.
Yes.
Had some fun dressing up for school. The kids wore costumes to school, and so a few of the teachers joined in the fun. And I was doing my best to not be blown away, since I was wearing a red shirt for Star Trek. That usually indicates you're going to get axed off the show or whatever.
Uh-huh. But Is that right? I didn't know that.
Did my computer lab time and managed to get beamed back home safely.
Very well done. I thought it was very authentic looking.
Yeah, only the best.
Did you make that, or where did that shirt come from?
I made it a long, long time ago. I think my husband and I hosted one Halloween party in our marriage, and it was our very first year. So good 18 years ago that I made that lovely Star Trek shirt.
In true Wells Tech fashion, you were a Trekkie. I love it. That's great. We are talking today about a topic that is something that every church, or almost every church, I should say, has to deal with, and that is the ministry to shut-ins. And Sally, when you think about a shut-in ministry, people immediately think of visitations, and many, if you're thinking in technology terms, a tape ministry. But times have changed, and we do field quite a few questions from listeners and others wondering what or how technology can assist in our ministry to shut-ins. And there are probably a number of different angles we could attack this from, but maybe the first place to start is, what do you share? Now, back in the old days, I think the pastor would come in and obviously provide communion and maybe a written copy of the sermon, and then maybe a bulletin, you know, from the Sunday, from the previous Sunday or Sundays. And then as technology got involved, then it was a tape. But now you really kind of have to choose what it is that you might want to share. And some of the things that immediately come to mind are videos. So we've gone beyond just the audio. Now we can provide video. And one question there is, well, what's on the video? Is it the entire service? Is it just the sermon? What kind of tape ministry or shut-in ministry do you have in Sleepy Eye?
Well, Sleepy Eye is an interesting community. Many of our shut-ins are in one particular facility here. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we have a few that are still living at home and getting assistance and that kind of thing. But my husband's able to go and do a weekly service at our nursing home / assisted living facility mm-hmm. that we have here in town. And so he gets that weekly contact with them. He takes them communion on a regular basis, just like they would have here in church.
Right.
And then we also broadcast our service over the local cable networks,
yeah.
And not just here, but in the surrounding communities. I think we're on in New Almond and Springfield as well. So mm-hmm. We don't do any duplication of our services to deliver specifically to our shut-ins because of the television broadcast. But actually, right now we have one guy that's serving over in Kuwait, so we are duplicating and mailing him videos on DVD format.
And do you do the whole service or just the sermon?
We do the whole service. In our setup with our camera, we have three DVD players that are hooked up to record simultaneously. So we can get the three DVDs to the various TV stations in the area without any duplication. Sure. Just that, you know, live recording. But then for the guy in Kuwait, we're actually duplicating to get him a DVD.
So what we do at Peace in Hartford, and we're just kind of getting into this for years and years, we had, of course, the tape ministry. Now we record straight to DVD, and those are, we have a copy, you know, of the DVD that's basically created right after the service, so it's burned to the DVD while it's going on. And then we trot that across to the assisted living home right across the street so that they can view services right on Sunday morning even. So could we do the early service, the 8 o'clock service? Or 7:30 in our case, and they view the service. And then what we have now is a disc duplicator that does three at a time, so we can multiply that disc, and those are given to our visitation pastor. But what we've recently started to do is to pull off the sermon from those DVDs and post that on the website for archived viewing. We don't do live streaming, and I know you do. But we do that archive sermon for those just interested in viewing the sermon. So those shut-ins that are maybe a little bit more technically savvy, or many of them have help from family members, they can now go to the website. And we usually have it up by Tuesday morning, probably, you know, the last Sunday's sermon. And all we do is the sermon, so we're avoiding some of the copyright issues that come with showing the entire service if there's copyrighted material in the service on the web.
And, you know, you get a dual purpose by doing that kind of thing. You can also share with those who weren't able to be in attendance. Mm-hmm. You can put those kind of videos on your Facebook page as well, maybe get a little bit broader audience through Facebook right. connections and that kind of thing. So so the shut-in ministry has grown to a I'm an unchurched or I'm unable to be in church or whatever it might be, right. That you can do more outreach focused ministry right. with the same content.
And I know some churches that use kind of portable players, DVD players. The concern there is always the technology and how to get that working, or if the the shut-in themselves, if they're challenged, maybe they have eyesight issues or whatever. You obviously need big buttons there for them to push and be able to play, and then also hear, of course. And when you're doing that kind of sharing, whether it's a DVD or whatever, then you don't have as many copyright concerns because you're sharing that basically with an internal audience. But once you put it online, then you have to be reticent of the copyright restrictions that there may be for the content that you're putting online. So if you're just doing the sermon, not a problem, but if you're doing the entire service, then you may want to look into a couple of the what they call podcasting licenses that are available through onelicense.net or CCLI. Those are all going to cover most of the content that you would have online if that's the way you'd like to go. Even if you're putting it online just for the sole purpose of your shut-ins, if more than just your shut-ins can get to it, then you have to be concerned about that.
The safest thing is the sermon only, because right. your pastor obviously holds that copyright. So,
correct.
Yeah.
But the sermon isn't the only thing, Sally, that you can post and that you can share with your shut-ins. One thing that I think would be of great interest to shut-ins is not just the service, but the Bible class, if there is a Sunday morning Bible class. I don't know of too many congregations that actually do the recording of that. There are some technical challenges with that, because typically where you're holding that, it's not set up for recording and good audio capture. Although the presenter may have a microphone, the dynamic of a Bible class may not be able to be captured. In other words, the comments or the questions or the discussion from the Bible class participants is almost as much part of the Bible class as just what is being presented.
Exactly. You hope you have some interaction going on there. Mm-hmm. So your presenter has to get really good at either repeating the questions or summarizing the comments that are being said so that that gets picked up on the audio. But even with that, you can, you know, probably frustrate your audience if there's a lot of basically dead time where you're waiting while someone's making a comment or whatever. So, yeah, definitely some challenges to recording those. I've just started live streaming and recording our Bible class just mm-hmm. this fall. With the advent of the live streaming via the iPad, it made it easier for us to do that. And I've definitely seen some advantages to doing that, just having captured a series of Bible classes where we're studying the Apostles' Creed currently. You know, right. It's nice to have that archive and maybe for your shut-ins to put together a whole series that you could share with them would be a nice thing as well.
Yeah, I think that's just awesome content. And it's, again, something that you're already doing. You just need to capture it and just make sure your audio is clear so that even if the video is maybe just a single or a stationary shot, so not the most dynamic, you know, view, you've got good audio for the folks to hear. So I think that's a great idea.
Speaking of the iPad, and if anybody's trying to justify maybe a tablet computer for your ministry, just having that kind of portability to take along some video to show in a shut-in visit, even just photos from recent congregational events or a school field trip, that's going to really make your shut-ins a lot more connected to the congregation, I think.
I agree. Yeah, that's a great purpose for that. Speaking of portable devices, another tool that most people have is the MP3 player, and that's a great tool to take along to that nursing home or in a small group setting where you can bring your music along with you, bring the organ or piano along with you right within that MP3 player.
Sure, and using sites like Lutheran-Hymnal.com might be a way for you to get some music that you could play for a small worship service setting. And even with Audacity, you could duplicate the music three times to have three hymn verses to play through or whatever.
Yep.
So lots of potential there and a good price. It's free
sure.
to use those.
One other consideration, one other kind of category that we should maybe mention before we leave the topic of ministry to shut-ins is visit management. There's two kind of sides to that. One is kind of the scheduling side where you're trying to keep track of the visitations that are made and the regular tools that are out there for visit management apply here too. So Shepherd Staff, for instance, has a visitation module that you can use to track visits, even make notes of things that came up during the visitation. Google Calendar could be used to obviously share a visitation schedule, or basically any old database would do to track when visits were made and just kind of keep everything keep it clean as far as when visits were made and what took place during that visit.
I think that would be really helpful, especially when you have multiple pastors involved in that mm-hmm. visitation rotation. Being able to share a Google Calendar, for instance, and keep up with things that way would be a big bonus.
Yeah, often that is there is a visitation pastor, but not always, or there's a vicar or somebody mm-hmm. like that that's doing the visitation. And then the other side, this is just more the operational side of it. If your congregation, if you're the pastor and the congregation pays mileage, then you want to track your mileage to those locations. And I just did some quick research. I'm not a big user of these tools. To be honest, I still kind of track via pencil and paper. But but smartphones today, in fact, most phones today have apps that can track mileage, which is a very easy thing to do. You've got your phone with you. I did a little bit of research and read some reviews and kicked the tires on both of these a little bit, and they both seem like solid choices on their respective platforms. On the Android platform, something called Mileage Tracker from Frank Android Software. It's $1.99, but I think well worth it because it does all the things that you need it to do as far as when to start, when to stop. You can attach notes. You can save routes so that if you're going to the same place, you just click a button and then it automatically enters it on that date. And on the iOS side, on the iPhone side, something called Milebug, which is $2.99, does the same thing. It adds a little bit more because it has a GPS functionality built into it, where you can click the start button and the stop, and then it basically tracks your mileage once you reach your destination or return home. So those are just two apps to consider.
Very good. If you have other ideas for using technology to assist with your shut-in ministry, we'd love to hear from you and add them to the conversation. So be sure to contact WellsTech. Email is probably a really easy way to do that. It's wellstech@wells.net.
Great. Let's move on to our interview this week, Sally. We were privileged to have somebody we've had on the show before, Greg Boggs, who's a member of the Technology Advisory Committee. He lives down in Nebraska and helps out Nebraska Lutheran High School quite a bit, but runs his own company. And he was on with us before talking about security, and he came back with us, and he had a friend with him this time, Joshua Johnson, who is the math and technology technology director, math teacher at Waco at Nebraska Lutheran High School down there in Nebraska. And they both came on to talk about a new product offering that's coming out on Shopwells called Smoothwall, which is a firewall product, but it also has modules that allow for content filtering, obviously virus protection, those kinds of things at a very reasonable rate. So let's listen to our conversation with Greg Boggs and Joshua Johnson from Nebraska talking about Smoothwall. Very happy to welcome Joshua Johnson and Greg Boggs to the show today. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Good morning.
Maybe we could start by just a brief introduction from each of you. Maybe, Joshua, if you wouldn't mind going first.
Sure. Like you said, my name's Josh Johnson. I am the mathematics instructor and kind of do the technology at Nebraska Lutheran High School in Waco, Nebraska. Which, for those of you that don't know, it's Area Lutheran High School that also kind of operates in the dorm setting. So for us on the technology side, it's not only, you know, offering them the things that they need in the classroom, but also kind of handing it over in the evening to the students and kind of operating as their home, making sure that they have access to everything. So so I'm at the school. And I think this is my 7th year teaching here, and my 12th, I believe, overall.
Okay, very good. How many students at Nebraska Lutheran, and how many in the dorm as well?
This year we have 76 students, which is, I think, just about the same as last year. We were we have opened an international program as well, so we have seven international students this year from South Korea.
Nice.
In the dorm, I don't have an exact number, but I believe out of the 76, it's approximately 60 students in the dorm. It's really, I think, primarily girls. We have a lot of girls in the Nebraska district in the 7th and 8th grades that we've noticed lately that we're almost becoming an all-girls school, but there's still a lot of boys. I think our freshman class was 24 students this year.
Well, that was a great pitch for all the boys in the Synod to come to Waco, I think.
That's true.
All right. Thanks, Josh. Good to have you. And Greg?
Greg Boggs. I am have my own company in Lincoln, Nebraska, Quality Communication, better known as QCOM. And we serve Nebraska Lutheran in the areas and fields of technology, both the network and audio and video for the school out there, and have worked several years with Josh out there. And one of the products we were looking at talking today was the Smoothwall, and that's certainly one that we support out there for Nebraska Lutheran High School. Also a member here in Lincoln of St. Mark Lutheran Church, so that's my home in Lincoln.
Very good. Some of our longtime listeners will remember that we had Greg on many, many shows ago talking about security, and Greg is also a member of our Technology Advisory Committee, which serves the Synod, so thank you for that. So Greg, you brought it up. We wanted to talk a little bit about a new product offering in the Shopwells program called Smoothwall. And this is a little bit, this is kind of a niche product, although every institution, every organization really needs something like this, but not all our listeners are necessarily involved with it, but benefit from that. And that's essentially a solution that allows for safe computing, both from people trying to get into your network and protecting those people who are inside the network to essentially give them a good computing experience when they go into the outside world. So, Josh, you are a big user of it, and I think a big fan of the product. Maybe tell us a little bit about your experience with it there at Nebraska Lutheran High School, how you use it, and how you came to the realization that, hey, this was a good thing for us.
Yeah, we've been using it ever since I got here. And I think primarily my first, when I first started the technology position here, didn't really quite fully understand exactly what Smoothwall was capable of doing. Mm-hmm. From the very beginning, I saw it as basically a content filtering that I could filter students' access to the internet to kind of get rid of some of the seedy places, as well as kind of limit some of the access to things that can be good but could be a distraction in study halls, mm-hmm. things like YouTube and the iTunes store and some things like that, which has sometimes gotten me in hot water with some of the students when I don't let them on their Facebook accounts in the school day. But it's been a really kind of a blessing there as far as the filtering. And as I mentioned before, it's kind of a unique situation since we have the dorms, but there's a lot that I've kind of gotten used to being able to filter things at different times in the day. And then this last year, we actually kind of turned Smoothwall into, I kind of call it the boss on campus. It pretty much controls everything from the IP addresses that the students get. And we actually started using an authentication where the students have to authenticate with the firewall, which actually for me is really cool because I can look, if I see our network's acting kind of slow, and I can look and say, oh, John Smith over here is, downloading something huge, and maybe, kind of investigate, see if it's like peer-to-peer, downloading and whatnot, and be able to kind of shut it off, and just kind of be able to track things that way, which has been really nice. But I think for the main use that I, like I said, my initial use and probably the biggest bulk of everything is just, kind of tweaking the content filterings. And it's really pretty easy, once the Smoothwall takes care of most of the things by content. Sometimes it does it by just kind of scanning the pages ahead of time and looking for kind of keywords and, kind of everything that's in there. And then it's real easy for me to say, this is a good site, and just let students have it. So it's been on that side, from my end of things, it's really mainly used for filtering those users that are on our campus and making sure that, that they're not going places they shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. And Josh, can you tell us a little bit about what the user experience is when they hit the smooth wall? Do they get pop-up messages or how does that work?
Yeah, and you can configure it. There is a built-in page. It pops up kind of a local intranet page that says this page is blocked. And I've gone through a couple iterations of it where it has functions for the, it tells the kid, here's why it's blocked. And I've actually taken that off because sometimes, the reasons don't always match. It just gives a big list mm-hmm. of reasons why this page might be blocked. So now it just says this page is not allowed at Nebraska Lutheran. And then it actually has, for my teachers, it has a couple of bypass controls where if they hit it in the middle of a class, a teacher could go in and just kind of hit the allow this page permanently or allow this page for 5 minutes, 30 minutes.
Nice.
But yeah, they hit a page, and I've actually from time to time kind of gotten more creative with it. And sometimes, like, for, you know, different parts of the school year, we'll put kind of a just an interesting pop-up page for them to remind them of a few things. And I also put in an area where once they do hit it, they can just email me. It'll email me the address and the page and say, hey, Mr. Johnson, can you please unblock this? Mm-hmm. And I usually tell them, and they're usually pretty good about it. I think we've, over the years, kind of gotten it to a point where, you know, it kind of is where the students are comfortable with, you know, the things they need are allowed. But I always tell them, I'm like, you know, most of the things that they ask for, I usually accept. So okay. They're not afraid to say, hey, can you please let us use this page?
Right. Now, Greg, you've put this in place in a number of locations. How difficult or easy is it on the setup side? What's involved? Are there servers involved? Is it an appliance? Is it something that the organization needs to provide a server for? Walk us through that a little bit.
Certainly. It is a appliance. It can be an appliance. It can be a server. The offering at Shop Wells that we have right now is going to be the software and customer provided server, or as I have for my customers in the past, offered different Intel boxes depending on size of the organization. For example, Nebraska Lutheran out there is running a full Intel i7 with many network cards in to do all the features that Josh has talked about this morning, because, as he said, it's kind of the big boss on campus and doing everything. I think for the smaller settings in our LES or daycares or churches that would be interested, that we would be looking more at a Intel. The Atom 530s have certainly become a staple or a workhorse of the hardware side, mm-hmm. with just two network cards in them, an in and an out, basically. The protected side, and then the internet provider side. As far as setting it up on a blank of hardware, if you will, like the Atom 530 platform with Intel, probably takes roughly about 30 minutes to load the software. Of course, the box is totally dedicated to being the guardian and the firewall. So it's the software is something you wouldn't want to load on an operating server that you have. It's best on its own platform or hardware platform with your network. But a lot of customers I have, both within our Synod and with outside of that in my own business, we have been able to send the boxes out to interested users, let them plug it in, and we can take remote control for them. We've had those services here, and we, within a couple hours, have usually been able to get the network up and going. Certainly, Josh has made a, if you will, for the Wells, a foundation for the smooth wall as far as the configuration, because as any software package, when you get it out of the box, It's intelligent to a point, but you certainly have to shape it for the use or the intended use of the organization.
Mm-hmm. And Greg, I'm just curious. I'm sure there's a lot of these kind of products out there. Is this one really a larger scale? Is this something you would use in a home setting as well? Or would our smaller church and school networks benefit from having this kind of setup?
Well, it certainly could be used in a home setting, but it probably is a little more overkill for the home setting. But certainly the churches could benefit by it, and I think that's something that we have worked with Shop Wells and Smoothwall as a price point to bring the product to an affordable level and give the guardian protection. The unit, any of our churches, whether they have schools or not, or our entities out there, certainly need to guard against the threats within the web, and the device acts as a unified threat management device, scanning what's coming in for downloads and so forth. And so beyond its guardian feature, it's also looking at the malware and other threats that are coming into the network. So it has cleaned up a lot of church networks where we've installed it.
Josh, when you are managing this, once the setup's behind you and the learning curve is kind of shallow, what kind of time do you spend a week just working with this?
It varies. It's usually for me every school year kind of starts over. You know, we make a lot of changes. So usually at the beginning of the year, it's typically just making sure that everything's still running. I mean, it's not really much of a time sink for me. Just kind of evaluating. I'll spend a few minutes each morning just kind of looking at the logs. For me, it's the logs from the previous evening because that's usually where, for us, it's when the kids are not in school.
Right.
That it's like, well, let's see how the network's doing and holding up. But it's really, I mean, there's a lot of really great features as far as like the graphs and the reports that it gives. So I can look and see, you know, what was the most common website or, you know, how did the traffic kind of, you know, overall, and just kind of compare it to make sure we're not, you know, maxing out our connection constantly to where the tutors and the people still on campus that are actually doing work, not that the students wouldn't be doing work, but,
right.
you know, that they are able to get some bandwidth to get their work done.
Cause
everything's on the net. And, the other things, just every once in a while, you know, just making sure that, for us, we have, you know, with all of the different interfaces, just making sure all the services are running. But it's really just a couple minutes in the morning, and then it is pretty, pretty simple when things don't work. And then the nice thing, I know Greg mentioned it too, is when it does get beyond me, like if something doesn't seem to be working, to be able to have, you know, in my case, Greg, or even have Smoothwall, you know, kind of remote control into the box and be able to take a look at things and
nice.
Say, oh, here's where, right. you know, this thing's set up wrong, and be able to go, oh. Because, once you get past the, you know, some of the day-to-day stuff, you know, the rest of the stuff, he mentioned the malware, all that stuff is so invisible that, you know, it's not I don't even notice that it's doing anything as far as like blocking malware and, you know, scanning for viruses, you know, it just happens.
There is if I'm not mistaken, is there a VPN functionality built in so that you could allow people, you know, faculty members or whatever inside to access resources inside the network from outside?
Yeah, there is. Go ahead, Greg. You know more about that.
there's several different VPN setups, and we've found for most users, for them to be very intuitive to set up and work with Windows or the iPhones or the Android devices, giving a lot of flexibility. One of the big benefits that we have with the product and ShopWells to the users is going to be the flexibility to configure this, not only in the Guardian side, but also a network sentinel, if you will, allowing outside users access to the inside network and knowing, as Josh made mention to, the logs of who, what, where, and when. We are, in fact, the product is being used at St. Mark's and Lincoln because the council has now asked to have resources, council member, lay members who need to get in, similar to as we do at the Synod level with the Synod website, but it's allowing access to permission file folders on the server.
Sure.
Who needs to get there. So very, very nice VPN feature. One thing we should mention in the Guardian side of the house, and I think Josh has seen this, is the fact that it is a very secure filter in the fact of not allowing proxy or go-arounds. Some of the other filters we've used in the past were only a port 80 or a web filter, and students pretty quickly figured out whether in a dorm setting or on a campus setting that doesn't have a dorm, that they could just go to the proxy sites out there and get around any of the blocking by doing remote proxy. And,
yep.
and Smoothwall certainly nips that in the bud.
Right. So we should probably wrap this up here. Just to give our listeners an idea of the investment necessary for this. Greg, can you give us an idea of how this is priced?
Yeah, I can give a the firewall.
Ballpark it if you would. Yeah.
The firewall product, Smoothwall, has I think put together a nice package for us in the Synod, where 50 users and below, the product was $250 for the software, and then $500 for larger entities of 50 users and above. And then we were on top of that, then comes the per seat license. And I apologize, Martin, I don't have the per seat license price, but
I think it's on the website. So
yeah, it's up there on ShopWells, and I'm not on it right now. But very reasonable. If any of the users would try and approach Smoothwall directly, it would be the product comes out of the box at $900 just for the get go, and then the licenses per seat on top of that are significantly higher. So
right, very good. Josh, Greg, really appreciate you taking the time today. And if somebody would like to learn a little bit more, and it sounds like something that people should be considering if they don't have a product like this in their network infrastructure, this would definitely be a time to take a look at that, especially with this new relationship and the good pricing that we've got here. So go to shopwells.net and just find the Smoothwall page, and you'll find even more information there and contact Greg's contact information as well. Thanks, guys. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
I think the whole topic, while it's very technical, is extremely important for every church or school office to consider, just the protection of the network, the resources on the network, and the users on the network is something that needs to be taken seriously. And it sounds like this product is a good fit for maybe a lot of our locations.
I was really encouraged to hear about the administration, the ease of administration,
right.
And from a teacher's perspective,
mm-hmm.
just the fact that they can bypass the blocks that are there. So if they're in a classroom situation and they do get blocks for some reason, they can get past that if they need the resource to keep their class going, to keep the education
yep.
happening there.
Ease of use is really important with something like
definitely.
That, and I think they've taken some strides to make that a priority. Shall we move on to news and tech, Sally?
Sure. I tagged an article this week from CNN that I thought might be interesting to discuss for just a moment. And it's titled, Smaller, Cheaper Tablets Could Become a Big Deal. And this is kind of keying off the new Kindle Fire and other tablets that are going to be hitting the market, I think probably just in time for Christmas shopping season. Barnes & Noble has the Nook Color. The price tags are coming down to the $200 range or less. And what they were saying in this article was this is actually going to allow people to kind of bridge that digital divide. The have and the have-nots is going to start to fade away. And people are actually going to begin to use these kind of devices as their primary computing device. Potentially, and just get computing into more and more people's hands. So
right.
I thought that was interesting. I think, again, the technology is going to be in their hands. They're going to be using it more and more. So why not make use of it for ministry purposes as well? So just kind of a look into the future, especially with these smaller tablets that are flooding the market these days.
Mm-hmm. And this is clearly, they've targeted iPads as the, kind of the high end. You don't need all that or to spend all that. And as these things get better, they become more and more a viable alternative, depending on your needs, of course. And there's probably application here in the classroom, too. But iPads sell for, $500. They're talking here about sub $200 devices that do many of the same things. So something, and certainly an area to watch for.
I visited my mother and father-in-law this weekend, and the boys picked up his Nook and started playing Angry Birds on it. And
yeah.
I thought, well, that's kind of odd. You've got Angry Birds on your Nook. And he said, well, I bought a card. And you can turn your Nook into a Droid device with a plug-in card.
Is that right?
and I wasn't aware of that. So we talked about, well, you got to get YouVersion's free Bible over the weekend and everything, you know, so giving him some advice on what apps to get and that kind of thing. So the world is opening up. The tablet devices are going to definitely become more and more prevalent.
Sure. Let's move on to picks of the week.
Sure. And this week I'm sharing a link to something called cybermissions.org and their mobile ministry training course. And it's a little bit late for me to be sharing this link because they have actually set up a training course, and this particular class started in October. So you can't actually register for this class, unfortunately. I'm not sure of exactly who's behind the class. I didn't read that deeply into this. But what I found here is that besides offering the class and having discussion forums and assignments and things like that, they're actually sharing the resources that are part of the class on this website. And just looking through the first couple of weeks' resources, they've definitely compiled a lot of good information about the potential of mobile ministry, just a lot of stats and ideas about mobile devices in general, and then how you could use them for ministry settings. So if you go to this website, you can download either in Word or PDF format, basically their class assignment sheets, but those different sheets have links to tons and tons of resources. Lesson one, for instance, has four different PowerPoints that you can download and view. I'm just looking at the first one here. It's called Mobile Ministry, and it has 35 slides, and it's just full of ideas and stats and information about mobile technology. And it seems to be pretty up to date. So if you're just looking to get your head kind of wrapped around what is mobile technology, how big is it, how are different ways that we can use it, I think they've put together a great set of resources here to show you that. The PowerPoints are titled Mobile Ministry Overview, The Next Billion. You know, we're supposed to be coming up on a big, I think, 7 billion mark.
Just
recently, as far as the world population. So they're talking about the next billion people and what our future holds for them. There's a PowerPoint called From Information to Transformation and one called The Future of Internet Ministry. So I think worthy of some time and consideration. And again, that's just the first course resources. There's lots more here.
Yep.
So check it out. And if you find anything that you think is worth sharing, be sure to circle back to Wells Tech and let us know or tag things or whatever. I'm going to be digging deeper into it myself. Yep.
Good pick. I like that. Great resource. Could have put that under ministry resources as well, but you saved it for your pick.
Then I wouldn't have had a pick of the week.
That's right. Yeah. Well, we always come up with something. And I'm doing a retread, kind of. My pick of the week is Google Reader. And it wasn't actually that long ago that we did a whole show on Google Reader, and then it was a pick a while back. And the reason that I'm bringing it up again is it's new and improved, at least by some would estimate that it would be new and improved. Many have said, well, I don't really like the changes that have made. I, for one, really have liked the changes that have been made with the new Google Reader. Basically, they've integrated it into Google Plus. We haven't talked a lot about Google Plus on this show. We probably should dedicate some time to that as well. But Google Plus is Google's social network, kind of its Twitter / Facebook competitor. And you have circles, and you put friends and, you know, put different people in different circles, and then you share with them. What they've done with Google Reader then is they've used the same interface, looks kind of like Gmail now, looks kind of like Google Plus, but put Google Reader in it. It's still got the same functionality. You can subscribe to RSS feeds, so you don't have to go to all these other websites and, you know, make sure you remember to go there and see what's new or whatever. You just subscribe to the RSS feed. It all comes into your reader. I use it every day, and that's where a lot of the news and tech and ministry resources and different things that I share on Digo come from, is through subscriptions that I have on Google Reader. The one thing that people are kind of up in arms about with the new Google Reader is that the sharing link is gone. You used to be able to subscribe to other people's subscriptions so that if they shared something, you'd be notified, and then you kind of follow them and do that. But what Google has done is they've incorporated their circles, their Google Plus circles, where now you can share an article with people in a particular circle. I think it loads faster. It certainly looks nicer. You can still do the send to thing. If you're a Google Reader user, you notice that there's still that send to link where I can actually send it to an article to Digo, and we can share it with our Wells Tech listeners. Or what I've done now is created a Wells Tech circle. So as people come onto Google Plus, and they put me in a circle for whatever reason, I'll put them, if they're a Wells Tech listener, in a Wells Tech circle. And right now I've got about 32, I think, people in my Wells Tech circle. So when I come across an article in Google Reader, I'll be sure to share it with that Wells Tech group if it's appropriate, and we use that technology as well. So if you're on Google Plus, or if you want to get on Google Plus, I think it's still by invitation only, but they're really not restricting people coming onto Google Plus. But if you want to get in that Wells Tech circle, let me know and I'll put you in there. That is my pick.
Very cool. So I have a question for you. Long-time listeners will know that you often complain that Facebook confounds you.
It does.
I'm looking still at this Google Reader, and I'm feeling a little bit confound, like a fish out of water right now. I don't like it when change happens, no matter where it is. So are you more confounded by Facebook than by Google and Google Plus and all that?
Oh, yeah. Google Plus, I'm getting more comfortable with. And maybe it's because I use it a little bit more. I'm just a casual Facebook user. Only when I have to kind of catch up on my kids or whatever. I use the Google suite of products a little bit more, so I'm a little bit more comfortable with them. But the Google Reader is essentially still works the same. You just have to get used to the Google Plus edition of the circles. So it's that's just the only change that's really been made. It's still a great tool.
Ever since I got my iPad, I pretty much use my Google Reader through Flipboard. Mm-hmm. Is that what it's called? Flipboard or Flipbook?
Flipboard. Yep, Flipboard.
And so I don't ever really go to the site. So now that I'm on the site, I'm just feeling a little lost. But I'm sure it won't take me long and it'll all be right at my fingertips.
You're a smart cookie. You'll get it.
We'll figure it out. Okay.
Wells.net feature of the week. Sally, we've got a Coral Fest coming up. And that is, when is that? In November, this month, in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, less than 2 weeks. We're going to actually
be hosting.
Up in
your neck of the woods.
Yeah, all the area congregations are taking in these children that are traveling to New Ulm, Minnesota to be part of this national high school Coral Fest. I think typically there's like a Eastern and a Western United States Coral Fest, but this year they're bringing all the schools together, and they're farming those schools out to all the different congregations. We're going to be hosting the Kettle Moraine group here in Sleepy Eye. Looking forward to that. And this one actually isn't a Wells.net feature. I should have relabeled that in our mind map. This one is actually going to be broadcast on MLC TV. Right. Martin Luther College is actually going to be doing the live streaming of this event. There will be a Pops concert on November 11th. That's a Friday night at 7 p.m. And then their sacred concert they'll prepare for all weekend will be Sunday, November 13th at 2 p.m. And we'll have a link in the show notes to MLC TV where you can watch that.
I'm looking forward to that. I'll actually be there in person.
Oh, cool.
My daughter sings for the Prep Singers of Luther Prep. I think they're staying at St. Paul's in New Ulm.
Okay.
But we're racing up there Friday after work, and hopefully we'll get there by the Pops concert, which is really cool. If you've never been to a choral fest, it is really a neat experience. Even if you're not that much into choral singing, these kids just do an awesome job. So if you get a chance, make sure you tune in to hear that or see that.
I know that the kids all enjoy the experience as well.
They sure
do. Real highlight for their school year.
Absolutely. So maybe are you going to be at the are you going to go, Sally?
I think we're going to make it. We're going to have those kettle kids singing in church on Sunday. We're going to take it all in.
Okay. So we'll see you there.
All righty.
All right, let's move on to community feedback.
And we have a lot to share today, Barton, so get ready.
Okay.
Starting off with some listserv discussion. We have our WellsTech listserv, which is basically a community email group. And last week, after our Chromebooks in the Classroom discussion, I shared with the listserv that they might be interested in listening to that podcast. And we had some interesting feedback. Luke Johnson shared information about how they use Google Apps through his company, actually, with nonprofit groups, and shared a lot of good links there. And then kind of a surprising email we got from Jeff Clark informing us that Google Apps terms of service has changed, and religious organizations, churches, are excluded from the nonprofit free version of Google Apps.
Right.
So that's really disappointing to hear, and that is. We were kind of surprised by that.
Yes, schools, our Lutheran elementary schools, still qualify, so you can still get it through the school site if you do have a school. But if you're a church, you just have to use the regular Google Apps if that's what you want to do.
And then finally, a follow-up to that, I invited anyone who was willing to share about their one-to-one computing experience, be it with Chromebooks or other setup. And we actually got a really extensive email from Josh Johnson, our interviewee today, who explained all about their new one-to-one program where they're actually using Lenovo ThinkPads, and how he's using CloneZilla, and that's been a really valuable tool to him to be able to easily clone the PCs when they have different problems that pop up or whatever.
Yep.
They also added personal insurance coverage with a deductible of $150 on the equipment, and they've stated that damage like dropping will result in a bill in that deductible amount. So interesting policies that they've implemented, and really appreciate that Joshua took the time to share all that information with us. We'll include a link in our show notes if you're interested in what they're doing at Nebraska Lutheran for one-to-one computing.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of these kinds of initiatives, and it'll be interesting to watch as we go forward what our Lutheran schools are doing. Obviously, the Chromebooks are being considered. The netbooks are we're hearing stories of those, and then I'm sure iPads in the classroom we'll be talking about as well. So very interesting.
Our DIGO group was very active this week, Martin, and
it
we
was.
Heard from Pastor Steve Daly. He shared a link to a mind map with a lot of Web 2.0 tools, and so you want to check that out if you're looking for some new tools to use to enhance your ministry in whatever way. Teacher Ryan Rosenthal shared a link to Nova Online, where you can watch full episodes of the Nova television series with the space and science educational kind of focus, and you can stream those from the Nova website. And then teacher Jason Schmidt shared a couple of links, one to Magisto, which is magical video editing in one click. Haven't checked that out, but I love the idea of online video editing, so I'm going to have to look into that one. And then a link to My Brain Shark. This is one we talked about a while back on the podcast, where you can upload your PowerPoints and add narration to them and turn them into a video that can be shared and embedded on your website. I really like this website and the ability it gives you. Actually, My Brain Shark just came out with a way to upload PowerPoints for iPad as well. They have a new product. I can't remember the name of it, but a new iPad app to go along with it. So lots of cool stuff going on at Brain Shark.
Right.
And then you and I were kind of prolific in our link sharing on DIGO as well. Martin, you want to tell us about a few of yours?
Mine are, I just have two, and mine are pretty similar to each other, both related to cloud storage. One is a tool, actually has been a pick of mine in the past, something called Backblaze. They released their 2.0 version. Backblaze is a online backup and storage solution. So you just install the software, you point it at whatever files you want to back up, and it just maintains an in-the-cloud backup. The reason that they are in the news is they released version 2.0, which has increased their upload file size. Now you can upload files up to 9 gigabytes. It used to be under a gigabyte, I think. So if you were working with large Photoshop files or whatever, you may run up against that, but no longer. It will also now back up virtual machines or VMware files, which is those of you that run those kinds of things with virtual tools like Parallels or VMware or VirtualBox from Sun. So if you're running those kinds of virtual machines, it'll back those up as well. And it will also restore to give you a restore option to a 1 terabyte external drive up from 500 gigabytes. So those are the big upgrades to the service, but the price has not changed. And one reason I almost always recommend Backblaze is it is unlimited storage. So you can upload or back up your entire hard disk or any connected hard disk, which is different from some of the others like Carbonite and Mozy and those kinds of things. So that's Backblaze. So great news there for people interested in online backup. The other was from the folks at Dropbox. And many of you are familiar with Dropbox. Sally, I think you use Dropbox maybe in conjunction with your iPad. It's basically in the cloud storage, and it syncs that storage from a local device to cloud-based storage. And now Dropbox is offering what they call Dropbox for Teams. And so let me see if I can find the price here. It is fairly expensive, but it will depend on your usage. For $800 a year, you can get a terabyte of cloud-based storage that can be shared. So this might be an alternative to buying, let's say, a server with a large disk in it and the maintenance and the power that goes along with maintaining that. For $100 a year, you can have a what's called Dropbox for Teams, where you can give up to 5 users shared access to this terabyte of storage. You can add more storage if you want for a little bit more money. But this may be workable for some scenarios. So, big news coming out of the cloud-based storage industry.
I always laugh when I hear the term terabyte. I guess I used to laugh at gigabyte. But, you know, we just keep progressing, and we just keep getting bigger and bigger. Back in the day, we were thrilled to have 256K of RAM, you know, and now we've got terabytes of storage. And it always amazes me when the ads come out at Christmas time and everything for what the electronics offerings are. And now they're selling cheap 2 and 3 terabyte drives that you can connect.
Ridiculously cheap. Do you hear about the hard drive shortage that we may be experiencing here pretty soon?
I did not.
Because of the flooding, was it in Thailand?
Thailand, yeah.
Yeah, that's where a lot of hard drives are manufactured. So PC makers are really concerned about maybe getting shorted on their hard drives for the Christmas season. So they may take a hit because they just can't get any hard drives because that's where most of them are made.
Interesting. Price of peanut butter is going up and you can't get a hard drive.
That's right.
Amazing. Okay. I have a couple of DIGO links to talk about as well. One is just a mention, and I'll have a link in the show notes to Christian Computing Magazine's October issue. They focused on church management software in this issue. So it's a PDF download. You can put it in your ebook reader or whatever, but you might want to browse Christian Computing Magazine's newest issue. And then I'll just make mention of something I was reading again on CNN. An article about, the title of it is Don't Sleep With Your Smartphone Nearby. And it's basically talking about becoming addicted to our devices. And this particular author doesn't allow them in his bedroom, not even to charge next to the bed or whatever. And I have to admit, mine's charging on my nightstand each night, and I reach for it in the morning time. So, but he's recommending against it. I really like this quote. Just have to read you a short paragraph. There's an instinct to treat the subject whimsically. And he has in quotes, "Land of Goshen, Ma, those kids are walking down the street staring at their cell phone screens. It's as if any criticism of what the digital age has done to society brands the person raising the question as backward, afraid of change, irrationally wedded to outmoded ways."
Yeah.
It's almost like the emperor's new clothes, where he walked down the street with no clothes on, you know, thinking how wonderful he was, and everyone praised him for it. And we're all just so connected that it's become the norm, and we think somebody that isn't is just an oddball. And
call him a
just
Luddite.
Have to kind of realize that and not fall into that addiction trap.
Well, in defense of myself, I do have my phone on the bedstand But that's because that is my only phone. We don't have a house phone. We don't have a landline. So if somebody needs to get a hold of me or in an emergency, I need to answer that phone. So
and that's the only way you use it?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, I that's true. I really don't pick it up first thing in the morning. I shove it in my pocket after I get dressed and go to breakfast, and then I listen to the Wells Daily Devotion on the Wells app while I'm making breakfast. But that's it. I'm not checking email. Yeah, I'm
draw the line. Huh?
I do. Can't say the same for my wife, but
can't say the same for me either. But we won't go there.
We won't. I shouldn't have gone there either.
I'll just read this article and try to take it to heart.
Okay.
You can too.
So okay.
All right. Much more feedback to share. Don Hennig from Christ in Zumbrota, Minnesota, wrote to find out what exactly an intranet is. And mm-hmm. I think that's a great question, Don. I think more and more congregations may be considering adding intranets to their digital online space and allowing for internal communication, private communication behind some kind of password protected system. So maybe you want to share meeting minutes, or you want to collectively work on a revision to your constitution. An intranet is a good place to do that. You can do that on final websites with privatized pages. You can also do it on something like Google Sites, where you only share the site with certain people and always logins are required and that kind of thing. So I had a few links from past Wells Tech episodes to share with Don, and I'll just rehash those in the show notes. So if you're interested in intranets, you can read up on it.
Good question. Thanks, Don.
Very much. So, okay. Next, we had an email from Brian Priest, who notified us that Google is has done away with private calendar URLs. This is on their Google Calendar offering. And in the past, you could get a private URL. It wasn't password protected or anything. It just wasn't a URL that was available to search engines and that kind of thing. It wasn't something someone was just going to sit down and guess your URL. It was a big, long, ugly URL. But if you shared it, people could get access to your calendar kind of through that backdoor way, through that particular URL. And that meant that they didn't have to log into your calendar or have a Google Calendar account or anything like that. They could just use this special URL. Well, that ability is gone now. And Brian was a little concerned because they had used a Google Calendar and shared it privately this way for things like their member birthday list for their congregation. So he was looking for a new solution, and maybe some of our listeners have a new solution to suggest to him. My idea was that you want that privacy, you want that password protection on anything that you really want to privatize. And I think it's wise that Google did away with that backdoor way into a calendar. I can understand the perspective, because it really wasn't private. It wasn't password.
Security by obscurity really only goes so far, and that's really not private. So this has kind of become the what's Google going to get rid of next episode.
Sounds that way.
We talked about them making changes to Google Reader and changing the terms of service for Google Apps for churches, and now they're getting rid of some of these features with Google Calendar. That's maybe a great conversation to have for a future show as well. That's part of living in a Web 2.0 world. You are kind of at the mercy of whatever the vendor, in this case Google, wants to do. You have very little say over it. You kind of have to enter into a trust relationship that they're going to do things that are going to be beneficial to you, but that may not always be the case.
And one thing you can be sure of is that things are going to change.
That's
so,
right.
Being flexible and thinking through your policies and why you're doing things certain ways to make sure that you're setting them up in the most wise way, given the circumstances and the tools available to you.
And always have a backup plan, probably, too.
Sure. We had some feedback from a couple of people about our Wells Online mobile app. Mm-hmm. Martin, you mentioned that you listen to the Daily Devotion each morning, and we do the same here in the Draper household. And apparently, Laura Marsh and Drew Cook are doing that as well. And they both wrote in to tell us that they're enjoying the app. They had different suggestions, like adding a church locator ability so that you could find Wells congregations when you're playing and beefing up that call report format. We have the call report out there, but
that,
may not be
that
the most
format
readable.
Has been there for before I started.
Sure.
Probably before you started too, and we're working at it. But it's it's easier said than done. So we definitely appreciate the comments. I was talking to a pastor the other day who was talking about the Wells app. I think he had an iPhone and used it to run when he was running, and he would listen to the daily devotion. Then he would listen to the through the Bible in 3 years. So his morning run, he got. Those devotional things taken care of, and was just really happy to have those available to him. So we'll continue to make improvements, but we do have limited staff, which is me basically doing this. So I'm doing the best I can.
Appreciate the feedback.
Yep, yeah, keep it coming. We do.
Kevin Claffin wrote to us asking for tips to get started with audio posting of their sermons online. And I recommended Audacity as a PC-based audio editor. I think we've talked about using GarageBand potentially on the Mac for audio editing. And then we have some links that we can share to adding audio feeds to iTunes and also using RSS Graffiti to automatically add audio feeds to
Facebook.
Your Facebook page. So all links from our Wells Tech Wiki that we want to share related to podcasting. So if you're interested in getting started with podcasting, check out the show notes for those links.
Very good.
And then finally, on our Facebook page, we heard from Leslie Bergerman, who's a member of Good Shepherds in West Dallas, and she had a couple of things. First, a question related to QR codes. Martin, back at the end of last year, we did some work with QR codes, and the potential is there to make QR codes guide people to different pages on your website and that kind of thing. And Leslie's just wondering if anyone has had experience using QR codes in a church setting. She learned how to generate them, and she's wondering how she might use them for Good Shepherds. So if you have feedback on QR codes, we'd love to share it on the Wells Tech Podcast.
That's an interesting technology. I don't think it's taken off yet. You see them. In fact, we were visiting my daughter in southern Indiana over the weekend, and we saw a couple billboards coming on the way back in northern Indiana with a large QR code. And my wife said, I know what that is, but does that really work? Or how does that work? And yeah, if you're not familiar with QR codes, they're just a square barcode, essentially, that you take you need an app on your phone, you take a picture of it, essentially, and then it usually takes you to some kind of website with an offer or something like that. So, but it does, anything you can take a picture of, whether it be in a billboard or in a magazine or even on a web screen, a computer screen. That's the way they work.
Yep, and I'm looking at one right now because Leslie also included a link on the Wells Tech page on Facebook to a seminar that's coming up next summer at Wisconsin Lutheran College. It's actually a Google Education Summit, and you can get more details at wlc.edu. Google EDU Summit, and if you look on the Facebook page, there's a QR code there that'll take you directly to that website. They say you can experience over 20 Google apps, learn from Google certified educators, trainers, and gurus, and earn 3 college credits in the process. It's 5 days long, and more details are on the WLC website.
More Google.
Yep.
Okay.
I wonder if things will change between now and then.
They probably will. So. Is that it for community feedback, Sally?
That will do it for this week. Thanks to everybody who contributed.
Yes, please do share with us your thoughts, your suggestions. Feedback is always welcome. WellsTech.wells.net's the place to go to leave a comment. Sally already mentioned you can always leave an email, WellsTech@wells.net. Leave a voicemail, 405 for Wells, 405-367-9357. We have a Facebook page. We have a Twitter hashtag called WellsTech. Digo, of course. We share all of those Digo links. So all kinds of ways to get in touch with us. Next week, Sally, it's back to the book.
Back to the Church of Facebook, that is, our current book selection. We read a chapter every month, and next week we're going to be looking at chapter 2.
And we have a special guest, hopefully, joining us.
Yeah, through the wonders of Twitter, we've actually connected with the author of the Church of Facebook, Jesse Rice. Looking forward to talking to him and learning about the book from the
author's
source of that
perspective.
Book.
Yeah, that would be a very interesting conversation. You will not want to miss that. Let's close the show with the music of Janine Dennis. Janine has a Christmas album out, so we picked a Christmas song. Not too early. It's never too early for Christmas. This is actually one of my favorite songs, Mary Did You Know, from her album, Oh Holy Night. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Thank you.